Halo, Last Light by Troy Denning. Read by Scott Brick.
For Elena Heyday, bold, brave, and brainy. May your own adventures never require a BR-55. Chapter 1. 0832 hours, July 2nd, 2553, military calendar. Crime scene Charlie, 104 meters below ground. Montero Cave System, Campos Wilderness District, Planet Gao, Cordoba System. Special Inspector Veta Lopez had been raised to hate and fear everything about the United Nations Space Command, from its sheer might and criminal war practices to the murderous thugs it called Spartans. So it was only natural to assume that the serial killer stalking the Montero Cave System might be one of the power-armored hulks riding through the darkness with her now. Certainly the M.O. fit. The victims had all sustained injuries consistent with a large, mechanically enhanced attacker. Injuries such as crushed bones and disjointed limbs, ruptured organs and collapsed skulls. But good investigators did not let their personal bias influence their thinking. They gathered evidence and weighed facts, and they let the theory of the crime build itself. So Veda would do what she always did. She would study the victims and establish a timeline for all 8 murders, then check it against the known locations of everyone in her suspect pool. She would catalog the weaknesses and habits of the remaining subjects, and use that knowledge to put pressure on the perpetrator. Most of all, she would be patient and persistent, and she would keep pushing until the killer revealed himself. And if that killer turned out to be a towering Spartan in 400 kilos of Mjolnir armor, Veda would do what she always did. She would take him down. The cavern floor began to descend more steeply. Then the whine of the electric engines deepened as the rubber-tired tunnel weasel changed gears to keep from picking up speed. A moment later, the little tram entered a broad gallery illuminated by the platinum glow of work lamps. Like the rest of Montero Cave System, the gallery was hot, humid, and filled with mineral vapors, but its beautiful flowstone walls were bathed in a cold blue light that made them resemble frozen waterfalls. As the tunnel weasel came to a stop, a trio of UNSC Marines in black BDUs emerged from the shadows and approached. They exchanged salutes with a UNSC major seated next to Veda. Then an older Marine with bushy gray brows stepped forward to report.
Area secure, Major.
Thank you, Sergeant. The slender officer at Veda's side was Ira Halal, a black-haired, blue-eyed major sent by the UNSC Judge Advocate General's Corps to help investigate the murders. So far, he struck Veda as dedicated, intelligent, and reluctant to cooperate. Any unexpected visitors?
Sir, none that we detected.
The sergeant glanced around the perimeter of the gallery, then added, But the conditions down here wreak havoc with our motion sensors, and 22 passages open into this gallery. We couldn't watch them all every minute.
Halal nodded.
Of course not, he said. It was a long shot anyway. I don't think this unsub is likely to return to the scene. The sergeant frowned.
Unsub, sir?
Unknown subject of investigation, Veda clarified. She stepped out of the passenger compartment. And I want to check those passages, Major. Halal turned to her.
To what purpose?
To look for evidence, of course. Veda paused, reminding herself to play nice, then added, I like to be thorough. Halal did not quite roll his eyes.
Our resources are limited, Inspector Lopez, and so is our time. I suggest we focus on the crime scene and not waste our assets chasing phantoms.
I don't chase phantoms, Major Halal. Veda stepped close. I catch killers. Quite a lot of them, actually.
Halal held her gaze for a moment, then smirked.
As you wish, Inspector. We'll do this your way.
He ordered the Marines back to their posts, then turned toward the Tunnel Weasel, where Veda's four-member field team was unloading equipment from the third car. On the side of the car, the image of a stylized tree fern sprouted from the letters MVC, the logo of the Montero Vitality Center, from which the UNSC had commandeered the tram. Watching over Veda's team were three Spartans in their famous Mjolnir armor. With their blocky helmets and titanium alloy outer shells, the trio looked more like war robots than human beings. And from what Veda had read about their exploits in the public record, that might be close to the truth. There hadn't been enough detail for her profiler to suggest how their personalities might have been impacted by such a steady diet of fierce combat, but Veda suspected it wouldn't be good. Halal fixed his gaze on the Spartan leader. Lieutenant, have one of your Spartans secure the adjoining passages and report any evidence of observation. Actually, my team will be inspecting the passages. Veda interrupted. Whether Halal was trying to hide something or simply did not realize how often serial killers returned to the scene, she could not say. But either way, she was not about to trust any part of the investigation to him or the UNSC. You're welcome to send an observer, if you like. Inspector Lopez, these caverns are under military control, Halal said, and Spartans are well-trained observers. But they're not homicide investigators, Veda said, and military control didn't stop our killer from murdering at least 8 people down here. Since those people happen to be Gao citizens, and these caves happen to be located on Gao, their murders fall under the jurisdiction of the Gao Ministry of Protection, which makes this my investigation. Veda paused for emphasis, then continued, As I said, Major, you're welcome to send an observer. Halal sighed. We'll send a guard. He did not even bother to look at Veda as he spoke. The last thing I need is to lose someone from your team, too.
Two? Veda asked. Has the UNSC been losing people?
That's not what I meant, Halal said quickly. It's just procedure, in case the UNSUB is trying to keep an eye on the investigation.
You just told the sergeant that you didn't think our UNSUB was likely to return to the scene.
Halal shrugged.
I could be wrong.
He turned away, as though intent on watching Veda's team unload their gear.
As I said, it's just procedure.
Halal was lying, of course, and it seemed to Veda that he was worried about something even more dangerous than their UNSUB. But she could not imagine what that might be. The Montero cave system was the most visited natural wonder on Gao, a vast labyrinth of interconnected caverns spread beneath 1,000 square kilometers of jungle. It had an untold number of access points, including 38 major entrances operated by villages and private spas, and until the killings began, thousands of tourists had entered the caverns each month without encountering anything more hostile than a flight of irritated saurios. It would have been easy to blame the UNSC and look no further, but the truth was that strange things had been happening in the Montero region for a while. 2.5 months ago, a rare tumbler had shaken the entire region, leveling 2 villages and damaging several spas. Shortly afterward, tourists began to emerge from the caverns miraculously cured of lifelong ailments and terminal illnesses. The newsmongers quickly substantiated the claims, and sick people began to flood into the caves, hoping for their own miracles. Then, a month after the quake, a UNSC task force entered the Cordova star system and requested permission to conduct research in the caverns. The common assumption was that ONI, the UNSC's notorious Office of Naval Intelligence, wanted to investigate the miracle cures. Gao's anti-centralization government denied the request. The task force insisted, and after a tense negotiation, President Aponte reluctantly granted permission to land a small research team. The small team turned into an entire battalion, which promptly occupied the region's most elegant spa and declared the entire cave system off-limits to everyone else. Predictably, the order inflamed Gao's fiercely independent citizens, and local guides began to sneak people into the caverns via hundreds of unmapped entrances. For a couple of weeks, the two sides pretended to ignore each other. Then tourists began to go missing or turn up dead. Suspicion quickly fell on the UNSC, and sales-hungry newsmongers began to press for a harsh response. President Aponte had no choice. He instructed the Ministry of Protection to investigate, then publicly ordered the UNSC to cooperate. To everyone's surprise, the UNSC commander responded by proposing a joint inquiry. That had been 2 days ago. Now, here Veda was, inspecting the first of a long chain of compromised crime scenes with a counterpart who seemed to take her for some ditz who could be intimidated by an air of assumed authority. Veda stepped into Halal's line of sight. "Don't hold back on me, Major," she said. "It's a mistake. A serious one." Halal finally turned back to her. "Mistake, Inspector?" he asked. "As I recall, I've granted every request you've made." "They're not requests," Veda said. "And if you expect me to believe this is some kind of research battalion, you're a fool. The UNSC is fighting something down here, and you're so afraid of it that you brought a squad of Spartans to protect us." The Spartan leader stepped over to join them. "Ma'am, the 717th Xenomaterials Exploitation Battalion is a research battalion." His voice was crisp and deep, even over his helmet speaker. "But even scientific units can find themselves in combat. There are always enemies." Veda turned and craned her neck to look up at the Spartan. Standing well over 2 meters tall in his Mjolnir armor, he was distinguishable from his two female subordinates by the color of his pale blue armor and slightly bulkier shape. It would be difficult to read his reactions beneath all that equipment, but if he was trying to cover for the UNSC, or even just Halal, Veda wanted to know why. "Let me see if I have this straight," she said. "The 717th is just an innocent research battalion that's under attack. By what? Cave monsters?" She shook her head. "I'm sorry, but I just don't believe that, Spartan. Which one are you again?"
"Fred 104, ma'am. And I don't particularly care what you believe." He pointed toward her investigative team. "But it's my job to protect your people, and I don't want anyone killed on my watch. If you'll point out who will be inspecting the passages, I'll send an escort along to provide security." Veda stared up at him for a moment, trying to see through the glare on his faceplate so she could get a read on his expression. But it was no use. The reflective coating seemed designed to prevent anyone from seeing the human face inside a Spartan's helmet. After a moment, Veda waved her second in command over. "Sinola, take a look into the passages around here. See if anyone has been keeping an eye on the crime scene." Sinola glanced around the cavern perimeter.
"Sure, boss."
A green-eyed matron with long blonde hair tucked into the hood of her white coveralls. Sinola Lerone was a Ministry of Protection veteran 15 years Veda's senior.
"It might take a while."
Veda shrugged.
"It has to be done."
She let her gaze slide toward Fred.
"And you'll have an escort.
Fred 104 here seems to think we could be attacked any moment." Sinola held Veda's eyes just long enough to confirm she had taken the hint, then asked,
"Really?"
She turned to the Spartan.
"Who are you worried about, Fred? Maybe you think the insurrection is starting up again?"
"That's ridiculous," Halal interjected.
"Gao may have sided with the insurrectionists in the past, but the civil war is over.
and no one is going to send a Spartan fire team to stand garrison against a bunch of disobedient tourists.
Veda had to give Halal credit. He had recognized Senola's play and cut her off before she had a chance to put Fred off balance, and now Veda was left wondering whether the Major had been trying to protect Fred or some other secret. Either way, it suggested Halal was here as much to manage the situation as he was to catch a killer, and that told her something about the UNSC's worst fears.
It told her a lot. Veda looked back to Senola. Tell Cirillo to use spiders on this one, then go have a look at those passages. I'll have the Major show me around the crime scene.
Senola confirmed the order with a nod, then Fred took her over to introduce her to the Spartan who would be escorting her.
Your techs use spiders? Halal asked, watching the pair depart.
Trace evidence, bots, Veda explained.
They look like little spiders and crawl all over everything. By the time they're finished, we'll have a three-dimensional map of every fiber, skin cell, print, track, and speck of DNA in this place.
I see, Halal said. Very efficient. Not really.
Veda wasn't about to detail the technology's weakness for anyone from the UNSC, but the spiders were expensive and slow. Each single-use pod cost more than her salary for a year, and a scene the size of this one could take a full week to process. Fred returned and assumed a position behind Veda and Halal, and Halal led the way toward a pair of high-backed benches about 20 paces ahead.
Any chance we have a vid or photos of the bodies in situ? Veda asked.
Halal shook his head.
Sorry, I only arrived a few days ago myself. Prior to that, I'm afraid Battalion was treating civilian deaths as collateral damage.
Collateral to what? Nobody's at war here. Veda made a point of looking over her shoulder at Fred.
Are they, Fred?
If we were fighting a war here, Fred said, you'd know it.
But you're here for a reason, Veda pressed.
As Major Halal said, they don't send Spartans to stand garrison against tourists.
I can't comment on our mission.
Fred's faceplate shifted toward Halal. That would violate Security Directive Foxtrot Tango Angel 7012.
That's understood, Halal said.
But your mission does not involve hostilities against Gao civilians. You can confirm that much, Spartan.
Fred remained silent for a moment, then finally dipped his helmet in acknowledgement. Yes, sir. I can confirm that.
Thank you, Halal said.
They reached the benches and stopped, and he pointed. The initial attack occurred here. Located directly opposite each other, the two benches faced a hissing steam vent, one of the thousands that permeated the Montero Caverns. A pair of freestanding lamps lay shattered on the cavern floor. A third bench lay about 3 meters away, toppled onto its back and bent at the middle. Veda ignored the scene and turned to Fred.
I'm sure you realize how convenient your security directive sounds.
Convenient, ma'am.
Fred cocked his helmet to the side. In what way?
If you can't tell me who you're fighting, it's hard to rule them out as the killer, Veda said.
So I must assume that you're keeping me in doubt to protect yourself.
I have no choice.
Conclude what you want, ma'am, Fred said. But you're misrepresenting what I said.
I don't believe I am.
I didn't say we were fighting anyone, Fred said. I said I couldn't comment on our mission. There's a difference.
The fact that civilian deaths were classified as collateral damage implies armed conflict, Veda said. The fact that you sent a Spartan along to guard Senola implies a threat. Stop playing semantics and give me a straight answer.
Fred's faceplate turned away from her.
I'm not at liberty to do that, Inspector.
Fred is very careful about security,
Halal said, stepping between Veda and the Spartan. But I assure you he's not trying to protect himself or anyone else on Blue Team. Spartans don't kill for fun, Inspector Lopez.
Veda studied Halal for a moment, wondering if he realized his attempts to shield Fred only made the Spartan look more suspect, then said,
I'm sure you understand why I can't simply take your word for that, Major. She turned back to the benches and activated her hand lamp, then began to inspect the area for signs of struggle.
I don't see any blood here. Where exactly was the body found?
Halal spoke to a tack pad strapped to his forearm.
Wendell? Ready to proceed, Major, the tack pad replied.
The tinny voice belonged to the battalion's artificial intelligence, or rather the small aspect of Wendell's consciousness installed in Halal's tack pad. Veda did not have a full understanding of the capabilities and limits of UNSC AIs, but from what she had observed earlier, Wendell had a similar presence in nearly every piece of battalion equipment capable of hosting a software subroutine.
Crime scene Charlie is more expansive and complicated than the others we'll be visiting, Wendell began. As you can see, the initial confrontation occurred here at the vent area itself, but the actual attack...
Knowing she would have a chance to study Wendell's report at length later, Veda shut the AI's voice out of her thoughts and began to examine the scene on her own. The floor in this area of the cavern was primarily a concrete tram path, flanked by packed mud. But the benches had been bolted into a small paving stone circle, which surrounded the natural steam vent. The legs of the missing bench had been snapped off at the bolts, suggesting it had been removed by a single, quick, powerful jerk. Veda crouched down and began to examine the stone pad. She still saw no sign of blood, but there were a couple of faint smears that suggested shoes spinning around. She turned away from the missing bench, then used her hand lamp to follow a faint trail of footprints off the pad. The trail was easier to follow over the packed mud floor, and Veda could see that it had been made by two different pairs of shoes. The trail split 20 paces later, with the larger set of tracks turning down the length of the gallery and the smaller set continuing toward the wall. Veda followed the second trail by the wall. In this area, the stalactites hung so low that many joined with stalagmites to create a cage of thin, wasted columns. In front of this cage lay a large circle of disturbed mud. There were no obvious blood stains in the mud or on the formation itself, but several columns had been snapped off to punch a hole into the cage. Veda shined her lamp through the gap and found a stony gray floor marked by 8 pale scratch marks. She knew better than to jump to conclusions, but the suggestion was obvious. Someone had been clawing at the ground as they were dragged back into the gallery. Scattered across the stone were a few dark dots that resembled blood spatter.
A crisp, speaker-modulated voice sounded behind Veda. "Something wrong, Inspector?"
"Yes," Veda said. Though she hadn't heard the Spartan coming up behind her, she managed to avoid drawing the sidearm that her hand was now grasping. "You might want to announce yourself before sneaking up on me."
"I'll keep that in mind," Fred 104 replied. If the Spartan noticed the hand on her pistol grip, it was impossible to tell. As usual, his expression remained hidden behind the faceplate of his helmet. He simply waved back toward the toppled bench, where Halal stood looking in their direction. "Wendell and the Major are waiting to continue the briefing."
"Of course they are."
Veda activated her headset, then pointed her hand lamp upward and spoke into her throat mic.
"Cirillo, do you see where I am?"
"Yeah, Veda, I see you."
"I'm dropping a card. Take a casting of the print next to it."
Veda shined her lamp on the Spartan's boots.
"We'll need it to identify which tracks belong to Fred 104.
There was a short pause as Cirillo considered the instruction. Then he said,
"Got it."
"Good."
Veda pulled a numbered evidence card from her cargo pants and placed it next to the Spartan's boot.
"Make sure the spiders give this area a careful sweep. The works."
"You know it, Mama."
Veda deactivated her mic and started back toward Halal.
"Mama?" Fred asked, catching up to her. "You don't look old enough to be his mother."
Veda smiled.
"As in hot mama?" she explained. "Cirillo can be a flirt."
"I see."
Fred was silent for a moment, then asked, "And it doesn't bother you?"
Veda shrugged.
He knows who the boss is. It occurred to her that there was only one way Fred could have heard Cirillo's side of the conversation. She glanced up at the Spartan, then tapped her ear.
You're monitoring our network?
Wendell is patching in your signal, Fred confirmed. It's for your own security, of course.
Your AI is very thoughtful, Veda said. I feel safer already.
Fred dipped his helmet. Glad to hear it, ma'am. They reached the toppled bench and joined Halal, who was looking back toward the evidence card Veda had left standing on the cavern floor.
Find something over there.
Maybe, Veda said. We'll know more after Cirillo and his people work their magic. If there's anything to find, they will.
Inspector Lopez, may I suggest you reconsider the allocation of resources?
Wendell asked, speaking from the tech pad strapped to Halal's arm.
The patrol found Charlie's victim on the opposite side of the gallery, exactly 16 meters from the toppled bench. The evidence supports Sergeant Boyle's notation quite clearly.
I'm sure it does, Veda said. But I'm looking for more than evidence of the murder. I'm looking for clues and mistakes.
Mistakes? Halal asked. I thought I made it clear that these sites haven't been processed as crime scenes.
Until my arrival, battalion wasn't even classifying.
You misunderstand me, Major, Veda said. It's not your mistakes I'm looking for. It's the killers. And this is where we'll find them.
Halal looked skeptical.
You sound very certain of that.
I am. From what I'm seeing, this is where the first murder occurred. And that means the killer slipped up here. Veda glanced in Fred's direction, then added, They always do, the first time.
There's no support for that hypothesis, Wendell objected. You haven't even begun to collect.
Stand by, Wendell. Halal muted the TACPAN speaker, then turned back to Veda.
This was the third death we discovered. What makes you think this was the first killing?
Because the killer made rookie mistakes. Veda pointed to the bench lying at their feet.
First, he didn't plan his approach. That bench was an obstacle to pursuit.
Second, he wasn't careful to control the situation. He attacked two victims at once.
Two victims?
Halal shook his head.
I'm sorry, Inspector. But the patrol only recovered one body. As for the bench, he could have grabbed the victim with one hand and pulled the bench over with the other.
Sir, that's not what the tracks indicate, Fred said. The inspector is right. It appears that two people were facing this bench as someone approached. They turned and fled the attacker together, then split up about 20 meters from the vent. One person, probably female, judging by the size of her footwear, took cover near the gallery wall and saw the first victim die. Then the attacker returned and pulled her from hiding.
Veda turned to the Spartan. Whether he was reading the tracks better than she had or just remembering how it had happened, she could not say. But there was no arguing with his analysis.
Not a bad read, she said. It's almost like you were there.
Fred tapped the side of his faceplate. Enhanced optics, ma'am. And tracking is a basic component of any Spartan MOS.
MOS? Military Occupational Specialty, Halal said.
But it's not forensic science, Inspector. There might be another interpretation of those tracks.
Such as?
Maybe they don't belong to a second victim, Halal said.
Maybe they belong to the murderer.
Interesting idea, Veda said. That was not the way she read the scene. But Halal was right. She was making assumptions.
Let's see how it plays. Show me around.
Halal tapped his tech pad and they crossed the gallery with Wendell droning on. The death site lies 16.2 meters from the overturned bench. While the scene is more expansive and complicated than the others we have identified so far, there is no evidence to support the hypothesis of a second victim. They came to a circle of damp, dark mud, and Wendell announced, Charlie's victim suffered the primary attack here. The smell of decay left no doubt that Wendell was correct. Veda ran the beam of her hand lamp over the surrounding ground, eliminating the shadows cast by the powerful work lamps,
and located a spray trail leading toward the cavern wall.
"Describe the body position," Veda said, "and the orientation."
Charlie Victim was found on his back with his legs resting against the cavern wall, 7 meters from here and bearing south 103 degrees east, Wendell reported. His head was pointing in bearing north 42 degrees west.
Veda looked to Halal. "Translation?"
Halal smiled. "His body came to rest over there." He pointed at another stain, this one on the cavern wall, and his head was pointing back toward us.
"Injuries?"
"Worse than anything else we found," Halal reported. "It took the corpsman a while to decide he was male."
"So the first kill was the most brutal," Veda said. "And the first victim was male."
"You find that significant?" Halal asked.
"Of course."
Veda started toward the cavern wall. "It's unusual for this kind of serial killer to mix victims of different genders. So knowing that he started with..."
"Excuse me, Inspector," Fred said. "But Linda says Deputy Inspector Lerone found something you need to see."
"Linda?"
Veda asked.
"Linda 058, Fred answered. "The escort I sent along to protect your deputy inspector."
The Spartan turned about 3/4 around and looked into the darkness between 2 work lamps. A pale crescent of light appeared on the wall of one of the small passages that adjoined the cavern, and a moment later, a scratchy voice came over Veda's headset.
"Hear me yet, boss?" Sinola asked. "We've got another dead body. It's weird."
"On my way." Veda touched Halal's arm, then deactivated her throat mic and pointed toward the growing crescent of light.
"Sinola found another body."
"Your second victim?" Halal asked.
"Maybe. We'll see."
Knowing the rest of her team would be monitoring the conversation on their own headsets, Veda activated her throat mic again.
"Cirillo, keep working the primary scene for now. Be sure the spiders make it to all the blood sites. Use an extra pod if you need to."
"On it," Cirillo said. "Stay in touch." With Fred leading the way, Veda and Halal crossed the area illuminated by the work lamps and started up a gentle slope. About 50 meters ahead, Linda 058 stood silhouetted by a circle of light, probably Sinola's hand lamp shining from the mouth of an intersecting passage. Standing well over 2 meters tall, Linda wore a full suit of Mjolnir, the same as Fred and the third Spartan escorting Veda's team. But the outer shell had more of a feminine hourglass shape, and its color was pale copper rather than bluish. And Linda's helmet was kind of awkward-looking, with a goggle-like visor and an external apparatus box mounted on each side over the temple. As Veda and her companions climbed, they began to smell the odor of a decomposing body, and Halal said,
"I'll admit it, Inspector. I'm impressed. It hadn't even occurred to me to look for a second victim."
Normally, Veda would have been tempted to offer a lecture on the importance of letting the scene tell its own story, but that would have been a waste of breath. From what she had seen so far, Halal had been sent here to manage the problem first and solve a crime second, so the best way to win his cooperation would be to let him know she had no interest in making his job difficult.
"The Ministry sent its best, Major," Veda said.
"President Aponte just wants the killer stopped. He has no interest in blaming the UNSC. Quite the opposite, in fact. He's under tremendous pressure to end your occupation of the Montero Vitality Center, and naming a UNSC suspect would force his hand."
"Meaning?"
"Meaning it's better for everyone to catch this person as soon as possible," Veda explained. "The longer this goes on, the worse it is for everyone."
Halal was silent for a moment, then nodded.
"I can see that," he said. "But if the killer turns out to be UNSC, it would still be a political nightmare for us. The trial would make headlines all the way to Earth."
"Trial?"
Veda asked.
"You need to do your research, Major Halal. I'm not a big fan of trials."
"I'm not sure I understand, Inspector."
Veda flashed a knowing smile.
"Sure you do," she said. "Just think about it."
Halal's brow shot up, but he said nothing and looked away. As they drew close to the passage where the body had been found, he put a hand over his nose and stopped a few steps short. Clearly he was not accustomed to murder scenes. The Spartan, Linda 058, was standing next to the mouth of the passage, her waist about level with the top. Senola stood on the opposite side of the opening, her knees, gloves, and hair smeared with dirt.
"The DB is 50 meters back," Senola said, still breathing hard from the crawl.
She raised a round, hand-sized device that appeared to be mostly lens, surrounded by a ring of lamps. An alternate light source imager that recorded crime scenes across a wide spectrum of visible and non-visible light.
"I have some good shots, so you don't need to go in there if you don't want to. It gets pretty tight."
"Female?" Veda asked. "You're sure?"
"No doubt," Senola said. "She's in third stage decomp, but she's still recognizable."
"Good," Veda said. "Any insect colonization? It would be nice to get a data death on this one." Senola nodded.
"There are a bunch of different bugs," she said. "But I don't know if we'll have files on the larva. They're all troglobites. White and blind, antennae as long as my finger, stuff like that."
"We'll figure out something," Veda said. "There has to be a Quainto somewhere who's made a career out of studying cave insects." Veda stooped down and shined her hand lamp into the crawlway, then forced herself to look. It was not easy. As a teenager, she had spent 3 weeks in hell, held captive in a stone cellar the size of a coat closet. She had finally managed to escape by scratching the mortar from around a rock and smashing her abductor's skull into porridge, but killing him had not freed her entirely, not in the ways that really counted. She still feared tight spaces and breath that smelled of tobacco gum and a man's fingers running through her hair. She still feared a lot of things. Veda chased away the memory and forced herself to concentrate. In the center of the crawlway, she could see Senola's hand and knee prints straddling a shallow furrow on the floor. The furrow was perhaps 30 centimeters wide, and so faint it was almost unrecognizable.
"Drag mark?" she asked. "That's right, all the way back to the DB," Senola confirmed. "But no sign of who did the dragging."
Veda continued to study the passage. Only a meter in diameter, it was too small for a Spartan in full armor. Of course, armor could be removed. About 3 meters in, Veda spotted the gray, thumb-sized lozenge of a motion sensor stuck to the passage wall. A single set of hand and knee prints overlaid the drag marks, running back to the motion sensor and no farther. It was hard to imagine someone missing the smell of the dead woman, so either someone had planted the sensor before the smell grew too bad, or they were outfitted with breathing filters.
"No knee or hand tracks past the body?" Veda asked, just confirming what Senola had already told her. "No prints or scuffs on the walls?"
"Nothing, boss," Senola said. "I can't explain it, but I checked with an alternate light source. Mag lens, UV, infra, everything I had with me."
"Then I'd better let Cirillo have the scene first."
Hoping her relief would not be too obvious, Veda backed away from the passage and stood. Everyone on her own team knew of her abduction and her problem with confined spaces, but that was hardly something she wanted to share with her UNSC counterparts, particularly not when one of them might be the serial killer she was hunting. She turned to Senola.
"Why don't you show us the shots?"
"Sure."
Senola began to tap the ALSI controls, then raised the viewfinder so Veda and Halal could see.
"This one is probably the most interesting."
The display showed the decomposing figure of a female corpse dressed in torn black slacks and a blood-stained blouse embroidered with flowers. While the cause of death was not immediately apparent, her bloody clothes and smashed nose indicated a violent death. But her body had been laid out on its back as though she were resting, with her hands clasped across her chest and her eyelids held shut by a pair of small pebbles.
"Now that is interesting," Veda said.
"Yeah?" Linda 058 asked over her shoulder. "You don't see a lot of people beaten to death on Gao?"
"I'm afraid we do," Veda said. "But this time, it looks like the killer felt remorse."